You're listening to Asians Represent, a series on the One Shot Podcast Network. I'm your host, Daniel Kwan, and this episode is brought to you by our amazing supporters on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/AZNSrepresent for exclusive content, show notes, and more. God, what a great song.
That is a jam.
Great song. By DJ Pavilion, a wedding DJ that I know, who has offered.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say DJ Khaled.
Just know DJ Khaled.
I don't know. That's the first thing my brain went to.
Yeah, you know, I happen to know DJ Khaled because he's a big fan of Asians Represent.
Daniel Kwan, winning. We the best Asians Represent. Because technically, he's Asian.
Yeah,
technically,
we the best Asians. Yeah. I don't know.
oh boy.
No, but the we have been using that song "Euphoria" by Pavilion for like years at this point, years, and he has like graciously allowed us to use it for free. And I was talking to him the other day actually, and he was like, "Oh, do you still use the song?" And I was like, "Yeah, every single time." And he's like, "Do you want like a new one?" And I was like, "Oh, so we might actually collaborate." And make a new sort of theme song beat for Asians Represent. So we should all talk. Like, what is the vibe? Do we want some like wind instruments? Do we want chimes? I don't
something
know.
Something that's just like hella racist.
Like caricature.
Hella gong song energy. Like that's what we want.
You want
or
it to start
like
with like a gong?
Confusing, yeah. Like a glockenspiel.
Oh, glockenspiel would be fun. Yeah.
And then everybody's going to come after us and be like, oh, cultural appropriation.
Super stereotypical, but of another culture.
I mean,
makes you think.
Could be like, why is this Asians Represent song so German? What's going on here? Exactly. I thought these were Asians. Daniel Kwan's not Asian. Wait, Daniel Kwan's supposed to be a German guy. What's going on?
But he lives in Canada. What would be Canadian music? French Canadian.
Like a hot beat made from maple syrup. Things opening
just
back and
sound
forth.
Of like different yeah. forest animals. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, just a could beaver be. Running around
beaver.
Chattering.
like a river. I don't know. Regardless, we're going to have some new music in the future. Just got to talk to Pavilion about it. If you are a curious listener and you want to know more about Pavilion, he once went viral on TikTok a really, really funny reason. He goes by the handle Pavilion on TikTok, and years ago, he was, I guess, duetting a video of deep dish pizza, and he's Italian, and he was like, oh yeah, our the person who made our song is not Asian. He's Italian, and he was like, I'm Italian, this isn't real pizza, where's the cheese? And
it's
the entire
the
internet,
sauce.
And then there was this meme, and this guy duetted his duet, and was like, it's under the sauce, it's under the sauce, and it went absolutely fucking viral.
It's pretty funny.
So if you have seen that it's under the sauce meme, that's the guy who does not the guy saying it's under the sauce, the Italian guy in that video is the guy who does Asians Represent's theme song. So shout out to Pavilion. He's the best. Genuinely good guy. But yeah, another episode fresh off of seeing Emma, fresh off of seeing your first Godzilla movie in theaters.
In theaters, yeah.
We are going to talk about kaiju today. It comes up a lot in TTRPGs. It's often a selling point in many systems. Ah, this is a system inspired by Demon Slayer. This is a system inspired by Sekiro. Or this is a setting that has geisha and kaiju and a million other things. But the kaiju are often a thing that are used to advertise Asian-inspired TTRPG products. And so, because we've seen a lot of these, we decided, you know what? Why don't we just kind of like get together and talk about kaiju? Talk about our favorite kaiju media, talk about the new Godzilla movie, Godzilla Minus One, which is incredible. Just have like a chill time together because it's nearing the end of 2023. We are all tired, but we need an excuse to get together and just shoot the shit about big ass monsters.
Yep. Can't believe y'all got to see Minus One before me.
Can't believe the Commonwealth nations have received this movie before the former the British Empire. This must be revenge for colonialism. How can this be? We don't get it. It doesn't come out in the UK until December 15th.
Oh, like a full 2 weeks.
Yeah, a full 2 weeks.
So full that, 2 weeks. That sucks.
That is shit. Canada and all of North America got it way beforehand. So.
Wish you can celebrate the end of your work rush by going to see
that's true. Minus One. That is true. I can go see Minus One at the end of my work crunch. So,
and one of the things you can watch now is Monarch on Apple TV.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or other alternative channels.
Monarch, I'm kind of I'm glad it exists, but it's not a massive priority to me.
Have you watched it yet?
I have not watched it yet. Is it good?
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, I think I'll probably bring myself to watch it at some point, but I think it's like, I mean, you tell me, how do you like it, Daniel? Is Godzilla Godzilla in it majorly kind of tertiary? Oh,
yeah. I think it's actually one of the best pieces of media in sort of the monster verse.
Yeah,
I think it's my favorite
cinematic universe that matters.
I honestly really like it. I've watched all three episodes that have come out so far, and the production quality is extremely high.
I think what turned me off is that the MonsterVerse movies, even though I think they're fine, have never really managed to appeal to me in terms of the human characters. The closest they got was in Kong Skull Island. That was pretty good.
Yep.
But every other MonsterVerse movie, I think, has pretty garbage human characters, which you could say about a lot of kaiju films in general. But the only other good character in those films was Bryan Cranston's dude in Godzilla 2014, who they killed off after the first half hour.
They killed him off and less than that, because I remember seeing that in theaters and be like, oh yeah, like Bryan Cranston.
And then you gotta hang out with his son, former kick-ass dude, who is just not, he doesn't carry the movie very well.
Aaron Johnson?
Yeah, Aaron Johnson. Kraven the Hunter.
Kraven the Hunter. Yes. Young Kraven the Hunter.
His origin story.
technically an Asian character. He is from Russia.
Technically, so.
Should we review Kraven when it comes out?
Kraven, Madam Web, go for it.
you're telling me I have to do that.
Yeah.
I have been rereading the Grim Hunt story arc.
Grim Hunt's great, but Kraven the movie and Madam Web both look really bad.
They're all gonna suck. But Monarch. Let's go back to Monarch to start in this, very chill episode of Asians Represent, where we talk about kaiju media. I actually really like Monarch. I like Monarch because I think the human characters are actually very interesting. Not only do they have Wyatt and Kurt Russell playing the exact same character at different points in time, which I think is great. The lead is Asian. So the main character is a survivor of one of the other Godzilla movies. So she's like a school teacher. Spoilers. She's a school teacher who, while on a bridge, I believe in San Francisco, Godzilla literally comes up and fucking eats her entire class. Like fucks up your entire class. And she is deeply traumatized by it. And she goes to Japan to try to find her father, who's disappeared in the wake of this calamity in North America, only to find out that her brother has her father has a secret family, secret Japanese family. And so she begins to uncover with her, I guess, half brother, this conspiracy surrounding the agency Monarch, which studies and contains kaiju. It is very cool. Story's kind of told in the present in Japan as these two Asian leads are trying to discover what Monarch is with their old Kurt Russell, who's very good in the series. And then it's set in the past as they begin to kind of learn more about the existence of kaiju, and Monarch is forming as an agency designed just to kind of study these things. A lot of Asian leads that I actually really, really appreciate in this story, even though not all of it is set in Japan. I really like it. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I might check it out.
And it's not just Godzilla. Godzilla appears in the first episode, and then you see a ton of other monsters.
They've got some other okay kaiju designs. Like all of the new kaiju that have come out in the MonsterVerse, their designs have been okay. I think in the new Godzilla X Kong, the new empire where Godzilla and Kong start dating and decide to fight together. I think they're fighting, they're fighting against a new ape, like an orangutan kaiju design. He's called like the, I want to say like the Skin King, but that sounds wrong. I think that's... Ugh. Like the Scar King, this something like that. I don't know.
There's a creature in Monarch. It was in the third episode.
Scar King. But
Scar King.
Scar is spelled with a K, like in Mortal Kombat. So the Scar King. Yes. So
Scar King.
Yeah, he's like a red.
Yeah, that was in Godzilla. That's in the new. That's in the next.
That's in the next one. That's in the next one that's coming. Yeah, the one that comes out next year. It's like an okay design.
There is a cool creature called the Frost Vark that's in episode 3 of Monarch. They go to like the Arctic, and this thing breathes ice. It's really cool. I would say though, like I'm really liking the show. I'm intrigued. The plot has me like hooked. Like I want to know what happens. One of the things that I think Monarch does really well is it doesn't make these government agencies the heroes. Monarch is very clearly the villain in this story, and they're acting against the best sort of interests of like the general population of Earth, which I think is really good because, you know, the original Godzilla is very much like an anti-war, anti-government like movie, and that sentiment is carried into Monarch in a way that I think is better than any of the other MonsterVerse movies. It's very cool. And, you know, if you like Kong Skull Island, Monarch starts with John Goodman on Skull Island.
Yeah, that is probably my favorite out of all the MonsterVerse films, I think.
You know, like Tom Hiddleston running through green smoke with a katana, cutting down flying monsters.
Yeah, Tom Hiddleston and Samuel L. Jackson. And who else was in it? Brie Larson. Yeah, they all did a pretty good job. It just, I mean, I also really like the Kong design in that particular movie. So that's a properly solid watch, I think. The rest of them have been okay. There have been some misses.
I thought John C. Reilly's character was cool in that, too.
Yeah, I don't remember his character.
He was the American pilot who gets stranded on Kong Skull Island with the Japanese pilot, and they survive together.
He's okay. When I watched him, I felt like the potential for cringe was very heavy, though. Like they didn't quite veer in that direction, but I just wanted him to like pick up a katana and be like, I greatly respect the culture that this blade comes from, and like just start going at it. Like I don't know. Every time there's like a white dude stranded on foreign island with his ethnic friend who has died, like I always start to get a little nervous.
Yeah,
so. I thought it was good. I think of the MonsterVerse movies, Kong Skull Island is definitely the best one. The fight in Godzilla and Kong when they fight Mechagodzilla is so anime.
That's good. Yeah, Godzilla versus Kong, the ending fight, amazing. Dude, just messing up Hong Kong, I love it.
I was telling Emma about how Godzilla irradiates Kong's axe so they could beat Mechagodzilla.
Have you not seen Godzilla versus Kong, Emma?
I haven't, no.
Have you seen the original Godzilla versus Kong from 19...
Clips of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Well, all you need to know is that the original one, Godzilla... Wait, who's the one that shoves the tree down the other's face? I think it's Kong picks up Godzilla. Yeah, I think it's Kong picks up a tree and like shoves it into Godzilla's mouth. Anyway, it does the same thing in this movie. So
nice.
It's worth Mechagodzilla's design is really cool. Mechagodzilla is like beefy and... Stop! It was really well done. Human characters, forget it.
Human characters are terrible in that movie, but all the monster action is awesome. It's just a bonkers plot too, because Godzilla and Kong fight in the Hollow Earth, which Kong becomes a leader of at the end of the movie. But for some reason, they also go to Hong Kong because like they've been stealing King Ghidorah's they've got King Ghidorah's head from Godzilla King of the Monsters.
The previous movie,
and then they're like using it to build Mecha Godzilla, and it's just a clusterfuck of good stuff.
There's definitely a gap in the movies that I've watched. I watched a lot of the classic stuff, and then a huge break until Shin Godzilla,
Oh, it's another great movie.
That's a great and then, one.
Yeah, I watched that on a plane on my way to Japan. And then I think my dad got a copy of the North American release. I'm like, this is a different movie. What am I watching right now?
Of Shin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's cut differently.
Is it?
It's about 20 minutes shorter.
Really?
And yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that's been changed. Well, the original is very anti-American.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know which version I watched then, because I also watched it on a plane in Asia, but not to Japan. So I think
I probably saw the Japanese.
Probably saw the Japanese then. Version.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So would you say one?
Did they cut the sections of the what's her name, the actress that pretends to be like American Japanese American and wants to run for president of the U.S. and her English is not quite what it should be if she were Japanese American and trying to run for president of the United States?
Yeah, you just gotta suspend your disbelief.
Yeah, you gotta suspend your disbelief a little bit.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for this, and apparently this movie was it seems like there were some edits to it. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Regardless, I think one of the things that we should probably establish before we talk anymore is, first of all, when we're talking about kaiju, what do we mean? What do we mean? Because a lot of people are going to go into this being like, okay, well, like, are we just talking about monsters? What is a kaiju? Any of you want to take that one on?
Kaiju literally just means strange beast, strange monster, guai shou in Chinese.
Usually big. Yeah, just
big and strange and large. I mean,
yeah.
To me,
it's usually like giant monsters and kaiju media, they usually like battle against militaries and attack big cities very dramatically. They're devastating.
To me, Clifford is a kaiju. Like any kind of large creature, I think I would classify as a kaiju, partly from my own entertainment, but also because that's literally just what it means. Large and strange.
Yeah, like large, oversized and weird.
Yeah.
And for me, it's kind of inextricable from tokusatsu as well. Like, I know that kaiju isn't limited to that anymore, but that's my concept of it. Like, dudes in suits and angles and big goofy fights.
Really practical effects. And just like, you get one peek, destroy this building.
Yeah. I was not appreciative of like Power Rangers, Super Sentai, tokusatsu stuff in general until I got to kaiju films. Then I realized that, oh, this is like tertiary stuff. This is completely related. And then I started to gain more appreciation for all of those shows.
But Jeremy, what about the emissary from hell, Spider-Man?
Yeah, the emissary from hell, Spider-Man, is probably one of the best versions of Spider-Man. But I didn't realize that when I was a kid. Like now I completely realize it. Much respect to the emissary from hell, Spider-Man, who has a mech for no reason whatsoever.
Hell yeah.
A mech that's not even a spider.
Have you seen Spider-Man?
It's amazing.
Not a full episode. I've just seen stills of it.
It's so good. So this is related to this conversation about kaiju and tokusatsu. Spider-Man is a canonical, first of all. He is Marvel canon because he appears in the Spider-Verse comic story arc. He is like a motorcycle racer who meets a UFO. And the UFO basically gives him this wristwatch. And it gives him these powers. And it lets him control this ship called Marveler. And he can call down from Marveler a giant mech called Leopardon. And it is so fucking cool because it's all spider themed. And during the production, the Leopardon suit, from my understanding, was damaged. And so they only had a handful of shots of him using his final move as a sword throw attack to defeat the monsters. So every single monster battle involves that shot.
Well, I mean, that's a major characteristic of tokusatsu media. Like, it's just
so
kind
good.
Of- Yeah, suit magic, suit animation, like making the most of a rubber suit and a strategically placed camera angle to make all of the actors in the suits look a lot larger than they are. And wearing those suits is tremendous hard work, like sweat inducing, uncomfortable. And now it's all CG, even with Godzilla Minus One, it's a CG creation. So it's a little bit different. Like some of the artistry is not there anymore. But I think when we're talking about kaiju, like Emma said, you know, suit magic, stuff that people would have described as looking a bit hokey in the original films that were shown on North American TV in, like, you know, the 70s and 80s, but are really pretty magical when you consider all the sweat and tears that they put into making that stuff happen.
And I feel like it affected the sort of the conventions and some of the tropes that we see throughout are coming from the limitations or some of what's happening in those early films, what you expect to see when there's kaiju around.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, if you think about it, like the first Godzilla movie came out in 1954 and you watch it and it's still a good movie.
Yeah,
it's still a great movie. And, you know, the techniques that they use to actually have like Godzilla coming over that hill at the start of the movie, it's still, I mean, the face of Godzilla looks really kooky there. But it's still like, hey, that's kind of believable. There's also something special about that.
It's a very dark film, very anti-war. It's a much better film about the atomic bomb than Oppenheimer, which is just Christopher Nolan being pretentious for 3 hours. But it's very dark, very anti-war, very, okay, this movie is a direct result from the post-atomic bomb consciousness that sprouted from Japan in the 50s. And sort of the demilitarization consciousness that sprouted from Japan as well, where it's like, well, how do we, you know, we only have a self-defense force now. We don't have a military. The Empire of Japan has been shattered. What do? We look inward. You know, we make films that are based thematically on, you know, the dangers and threats of nuclear war and nuclear devastation. And we develop forms of media, everything from tokusatsu to like giant mechs that are about the technology that can result from warfare and can result from this, you know, post-war mentality as we investigate what war truly means to us through science fiction. So I assume Godzilla Minus One had something to do with that, but I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know.
Yes, 100%. It is definitely a return to that original legacy. And I found it interesting in contrast to Shin Godzilla as the other more recent one that I'd seen, which was it was very pro remilitarization of Japan. And so Godzilla Minus One is now back to that. And there's even moments where it's just a straight up message to younger generations that war is nothing to be glorified. There's
scenes. We might as well talk about, you know, Godzilla Minus One now. Like, spoilers ahead if you plan on seeing Godzilla Minus One. Sorry, Jeremy.
It's okay. You can spoil the movie. I don't mind.
It is up there for me as one of my favorite Godzilla films. I think it's incredible. I think not only does it really, it is a good homage to like the original like Godzilla movie, but I think it does this incredible job of like balancing that kaiju spectacle, the brutal devastation that's kind of left in the wake of Godzilla, but also those like somber sort of human themes, like the, you know, the anti-war sentiment and the sort of like the anti like nuclear sentiment as well, are all very present in it. But what I think is really neat about Godzilla Minus One is that it is an incredible, I guess with modern special effects, it is incredible. Like, it is the most brutal Godzilla movie I've seen.
Yeah.
The most brutal.
A lot more effort to make it feel like you are there as it's happening instead of just that zoomed out, like, monster stomps through city. No, it's like, no, what would this look like if
a
deep blast goes off in the distance and, yeah, how does that rip through the city?
There's this incredible scene when Godzilla is using its heat breath or its radiation breath, and the sort of dorsal plates on its back kind of like light up and start to jut out. And it's like charging up. And then when it lets it out, it destroys these ships in the distance, but it's like a scene in an anime. Cause it's like, everything blows up. And then there's this shockwave backwards, this recoil from like this heat breath, and everything gets disintegrated. It is really fucking brutal. And there's this scene where the human protagonist is like kneeling in the street, like crying after this shockwave has just destroyed everyone, who people who weren't even in the path of the heat wave, and fallout starts raining down on him. And it is absolutely brutal. The amount of detail they put into Godzilla, like the fact that when he finally releases the breath, the top dorsal plate literally like jabs into its neck and it shoots it out almost like the trigger on like a toy. It is something to see, like seeing it in theaters was an incredible experience.
Yeah. The audience reacted every time. And I found it interesting that they actually cover or like represented that. My God, my brain is bad right now. They actually showed that Godzilla takes damage from using these things, which was really interesting. And he retains scars. I don't know if you noticed that, Daniel, but he actually retains scars throughout the movie of these different things that happened to him. I'm like, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, there are just some like incredible details. Like we were talking yesterday after the movie when Godzilla is walking through Japan and the city streets, like parts of the city streets buckle under the weight of Godzilla, and you could tell where there are like sewage lines and other things where the concrete will literally blow up under Godzilla's feet and lift up. It's lift
like an iceberg.
The attention to detail is incredible with that movie, and the human characters as well were also very interesting. Like the main character is a kamikaze pilot who fakes having engine troubles to get out of dying. And he ends up basically caught up in this multi-year legacy of Godzilla being a threat to Japan.
Yeah, he sees teenage Godzilla and then
adult Godzilla.
This is like Godzilla the 100-Year War, isn't it?
That I was about to say, it's very much like the Half-Century War.
Oh, Half-Century War. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Have you
read it?
Yeah, I have it on the shelf behind me. Is that a new edition or like
this is the new edition of Half-Century War.
That's pretty. It's really cool. I have the original edition on the shelf behind me somewhere.
Nice. Half-Century, if you're interested in Godzilla media.
There we go. Here's my version. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So Half-Century War, for those who don't know or have never read a Godzilla comic or maybe didn't know that there were tons and tons of Godzilla comics.
Lots of good Godzilla comics from the original Marvel 70s ones to the IDW ones, which are they're all amazing. But I definitely recommend Godzilla comics if you've never read them. The Half-Century War, Daniel, probably, go on about it.
Well, Half-Century War was probably one of the best ones. If you're talking about like the human story, because it's about a guy who literally follows Godzilla for 50 years. And he is obsessed with trying to kill Godzilla.
Godzilla's first appearance, he does the roar, and the sound wave, the bubbles that show his roar, it matches the sound wave of what his roar sounds like when you look at an audio file. Yeah.
Godzilla Half-Century War is incredible. And you see that in the protagonist, who is like, his war doesn't end until he's done with Godzilla.
It's a dude that grows old fighting Godzilla basically throughout from 1954 to the 2000s.
Yeah. And then in Godzilla Minus One, it's just over the period of, I think, like less than a decade.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Less than a decade.
His first encounter is in the early 40s and then it ends before the 50s. But yeah, same general idea though. Like, lots of turmoil, lots of talk about, like, lots of expression of trauma, not just of the main character, but of the society as a whole, which I found really interesting because I've read a lot of post-war comics by, not mangaka, but what's it called? I can't remember right now, but more serious, like, graphic novel type stuff. And it's all about, like, the failure of the government and how hard people have to try to just survive after the war. And this shows that a lot. It really tries to, it's sort of like a historical drama, if you've ever watched Japanese historical dramas, combined with a kaiju film. So there's a lot of sappy scenes. There's a lot of relationship and human emotion. But then also, here's Godzilla. He's here to rip your shit up, you know?
Would you say Godzilla is in the film for about as much as Shin Godzilla was in that one? Because in Shin Godzilla, he's on screen for like 16 minutes total if you splice all the scenes together.
More, I think, in this one. But he still is more of a background threat.
Mm-hmm.
In the grand theater of like human relationships and
I'd say more issues. Because there are quite a few scenes of people following Godzilla around,
mm-hmm.
Or them trying to like capture Godzilla. So Godzilla is a threat in these big scenes with huge boats and planes.
Yeah.
The way they try to kill Godzilla it's smart, but also hilarious. It made for one kind of kooky scene in the movie.
It's the original movie's approach to killing him, though.
Do they try to kill him with the oxygen destroyer, or is it they use something else?
So it's not quite an oxygen destroyer. They basically try to make it so that they decrease they sink him so that he basically get rid of, I guess, the friction between Godzilla and the salt water so he can't float.
Okay.
And they try to use pressure to kill Godzilla.
They try to crush him.
Yeah, okay.
But then their backup is, well, if that doesn't work, we'll kill him with decompression. they strap these like tanks to Godzilla to sink him, but then the tanks have these explosive inflatables, and so they basically try to kill Godzilla by making an inflatable ring around Godzilla's face, and Godzilla rises.
So do they? How close is it to being a borderline remake of the original Godzilla?
Over the place to some of the original scenes and ideas and characters on the military side, but then it's completely redone.
Okay, but they do go with the idea of Godzilla is irradiated creature that resulted from the atomic bomb and is now wreaking havoc. It's like a force of nature across Japan.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And like the name Godzilla is like, oh, the people call this Godzilla. Same sort of origin for the name. The one thing that I liked about the movie that was a nod to the production or surrounding the release of the original movie was in this one. So Godzilla appears at the towards the end of the Second World War and then disappears. But then when Godzilla reemerges, it's around the Castle Bravo nuclear testing at Bikini Atoll, the same testing that really caused that panic in Japan when it rained fallout all over that fishing boat. I actually really like that they put that in there as the sort of driving force behind Godzilla's reemergence.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool to see that because it was like, oh yeah, that is a part of the history of Godzilla and what made that first film like the talk of the town at the time. I wouldn't necessarily call it a remake, but it is certainly a very, very strong reboot of the entire franchise.
Mm.
So my big takeaway from this, if you need a summary, is I already told Daniel, I consider this to be like the Rogue One of the Godzilla world, because it's a modern kind of refresh of an original franchise by going back to what happened moments before, and then sort of an underdog story of sort of a scrappy team of likable characters and their approach to handling the whole scenario. Serious Rogue One vibes happening throughout this whole thing.
Yes, definitely agree. I think that a lot of folks who, I mean, the Godzilla franchise is like what there are like over almost 40 Godzilla movies, something like that.
Varying quality.
They vary in quality. I certainly haven't seen them all.
I've seen almost all of them. And
oh, damn.
I got to tell you, Godzilla Final Wars, that's some shit right there. Watching him knock Godzilla into the Sydney Opera House and watching aliens pop out from the sky. It's just nuts.
That was the time when they acknowledged that American Godzilla movie, they called it Zilla. That was the first time they called it Zilla, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Very weird Western remake of Godzilla with Matthew Broderick.
That is one that I have not seen in full. I've only seen clips of that one. I probably should watch it in full at some point because by all accounts, it's an okay monster. It's an okay kaiju movie, but it's not really Godzilla in the title role. It's a something under the name of Godzilla. They kill that Godzilla with missiles on like the like a bridge in New York or something like that.
It's also a smaller Godzilla.
It's a smaller Godzilla.
Yeah. So I've seen that Godzilla. I saw the 2014 Godzilla and then Godzilla minus one in theaters. Those are the three that I've seen in theaters.
Mm.
And this one was minus one is incredible. Like you have to see it in theaters. There was a moment during the final battle when the movie goes silent and then everything in the theater stopped.
Everyone stopped breathing in the theater. Yeah.
It was an incredible experience. I can't say anything more about Godzilla. Like, I think everyone should go watch it. Even if you don't know anything about Godzilla, if you've never seen any of the original like material from any of the eras, if you've never read the comics. Okay,
this is a prequel.
Yeah, go and watch this. This is a prequel. And like, this is the perfect place to start.
I had a moment when it first started too. Like, I knew it was Godzilla, but I had never seen a Godzilla movie in theaters, let alone one that was being shown as like a main title, like just like any other Hollywood movie. And it really hit me that all of a sudden this whole movie was a Japanese movie and it was in Japanese with subtitles. And that was the first time I've ever seen that in a theater or in a movie presented as like an A title that I can then go watch in Toronto. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. Just the first, when the dialogue starts, I was like, oh shit. Huh.
Yeah,
I had this, makes me want to see it for sure.
In theaters,
I had this moment of nervousness actually before the dialogue started. And I was like, wait, are they going to dub this? And then when they started speaking Japanese, I was like, oh, thank goodness.
You know, something I didn't really think about because I've not seen just straight up Japanese with subtitles in theaters like that.
I know it's not the same at all, but I did feel a similar vibe when I saw the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie when it came out like 2-3 years ago. I was like, oh man, anime is real. Yeah, that's what, because they play like Chala Head Chala like in the movie, and I'm like, oh, we come so far from the days of Rock the Dragon, that shitty DBZ song that came out with the English dub. So
that was not the song that we got. We got a different song in Canada.
Like for the opening intro,
because the opening song is different in Canada than in the States.
Really? It is not as good. They play a few instrumental seconds of Chala Hey Chala in the film, so I don't know if it's that one that you're talking about, or if you got something totally different.
The one in Canada, it goes Dragon Ball. And it just repeats that over and over again.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But also interesting example of how we're all of a generation that's been conditioned to expect an East Asian product to be significantly altered before we get to consume it in our own home. So, yeah.
True.
Yeah. One heck of an experience. Highly recommend. Go to the theaters.
You know, I was actually quite bummed that we never got a direct sequel to Shin Godzilla because I really wanted a sequel.
I'm not surprised.
I guess we did in the form of like Shin Kamen Rider and Shin Ultraman and stuff like that. Like we got a trilogy.
They were all reboots of these franchises.
Quasi-related films with Evangelion vibes, basically. That's what we got. And I don't mind that, but I remember loving Shin Godzilla so much because I was not in Japan at the time of the 2011 Fukushima disaster. Mm. I was in Taiwan though, and I was studying Chinese with a whole bunch of Japanese students, and that was a traumatic and like very scary experience because people were calling home, people were crying in school, and it was just a lot. And I remember watching Shin Godzilla and being like, "Wow, the vibes here are just so of the moment." Like talk about updating Godzilla. For 2016. It's no longer nuclear war. It's more like nuclear fallout that we're talking about now. So it was just really interesting to me. And I was so bummed that we didn't get to get a sequel with more transformations. Like I loved his transformations.
I love
that Godzilla design. I love how it was. What I wanted was, I was like, okay, let American Godzilla do his thing as like the hero, and let Shin Godzilla be like this creepy manifestation of eldritch Japanese trauma. Just go that way. But we only got one movie, so
it was really. I'm not surprised. It was only one. It was somewhat controversial in Japan when it came out.
Yeah,
there were a lot of concerns about it being pro-military and inciting younger generations to not see the horrors of war anymore and instead see the incompetence of current government that needs to be overrun. And part of that included bringing back something more than a defense force. And so, yeah, people weren't too happy about it. And also a bunch of people were like, what did I just watch? That was kind of like a weird procedural court drama.
I love that. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's definitely of the era because it did come out in that period where Japan was Abe still prime minister when it came out?
Oh, yeah.
He was prime minister. So he was
kind of in his prime at that point. So why there was so much concern.
Yeah. So he was pushing heavily for.
Yeah.
Let's make Japan great again.
Yeah. So
there you go.
It was the timing. But like Godzilla's always been representative of the climate of the time in Japan. I don't know about the American ones, but.
The American ones are just like, oh, big monster.
Big monster in San Francisco in Japantown because he's Japanese. And
he's just targeting all the Japanese.
Godzilla's really interesting because right now they have DC Comics is doing Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong.
I haven't read it yet, but props to DC Comics for doing something good.
They did a really great variant cover for issue 2 where they have Wonder Woman versus Godzilla. Really cool.
Nice. Like he's just in the background like,
And then there's one that I'm reading right now that's very interesting called Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons by IDW.
Oh, that's the one where he fights pirates. I love it.
He fights fucking pirates.
I want more historical Gojira things, just like how Prey is like Native Americans fighting predators.
Yes.
I want more Godzilla in the 1800s fighting like, I guess if we want to, we can have him fighting like Ronin or whatever in Japan. But I want him fighting like whatever in the Wild West fighting.
Japan
cowboys.
Had its own pirates. Like they don't need to be.
Don't tell that to the L5R fans.
Okay.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. But Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons is surprisingly good. It's like it's not the Godzilla that I thought I really wanted, but it's literally about. I never thought they'd write a comic about this, but it's literally about Sir Francis Drake telling the Queen, hey, I'm gonna circumnavigate the Earth, but my secret mission is to find this treasure monster island that's being guarded by a dragon.
Sir Francis Drake goes
to try to find this island and is ambushed by the Spanish Armada, and they're chasing him, and then there's a storm, of course. He makes it to the island. And he's like, oh, we're here. We found the treasure. It's ours. We get to go home and be heroes. And they're like, oh, fuck. The Spanish are here. They followed us through the storm. Don't worry. Godzilla comes out of nowhere and just incinerates the Spanish Armada with his heat breath. And it is just so funny. In a good way. I really, really like the series. It's only 5 issues.
I think it's Godzilla Rage Across Time has a similar concept, which is also an IDW comic series that talks about Godzilla and various other kaiju. I think it's like Anguirus and King Ghidorah are also in there.
Yeah.
Ghidorah are also in there.
Yeah.
But it's similar sort of concept where it's like different periods viewing Godzilla and interpreting him as would have been appropriate for that time period.
Another Godzilla comic that's very interesting, not necessarily Godzilla in a historical setting, but there is a series called Godzilla in Hell.
Godzilla in Hell's good.
And it's literally Godzilla has descended into Hell and has to escape from Hell. But as Godzilla is sort of traveling through Hell, it is encountering all these demonic versions of its enemies. It is artistically very, very cool.
Like, I find it funny to make Godzilla the protagonist, like the main character in that way.
But it, from what I recall, Godzilla in Hell does not have any dialogue because it's just Godzilla wrecking shit.
Yeah. It's a beautiful comic. It's interesting. He like fights and claws his way out of Hell at the end of it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And it's a little, it's a little thin in terms of like plot, but it is fun for immense kaiju illustrations.
I think. It's an art book.
It's an art book.
It's like an art book with a teeny little bit of narrative.
It's giving me like end of Zelda game vibes, where you have to refight all of the dungeon bosses before you can fight the end guy.
Tears of the Kingdom. I haven't beaten Tears of the Kingdom yet.
Godzilla and Link have a lot in common. Both silent protagonists. Both don't emote that much. So
they both have mighty roars. And they wreck shit for people.
You know, it's interesting. I just remembered that Emma said that Godzilla has always captured the zeitgeist of Japan throughout history, which I think is very, very true. And I think that's one of the reasons why Godzilla is one of the best fictional characters ever, in that Godzilla represents so many key aspects of Japan, and Godzilla can be whatever Japan and the world and his fans need him to be. You can have fun, goofy Godzilla with Minilla, his little son, bouncing around Monster Island, which is fantastic, with Jet Jaguar, like the greatest movie ever. Yeah.
I forgot to wear my Jet Jaguar shirt for this recording.
which movie is Jet Jaguar? Is that the name of the movie?
Godzilla versus Megalon.
Yeah.
That's the one I grew up watching all the time. That's Emma's favorite.
Godzilla versus Megalon is a fantastic film because it's got this dude named Jet Jaguar in it who's like a tokusatsu mech, and he's amazing. But you can have that Godzilla. You can have super serious Godzilla minus one, or Shin Godzilla, or you can have like American heroic Godzilla with the MonsterVerse movies. So like, he can really encapsulate so many different genres, and there aren't that many fictional characters that do that. Like Batman is another one that sort of can encapsulate different vibes, from like weird kooky 1966 vibes to like Dark Knight vibes. And so I think that's an interesting feature about Godzilla. Now, you were talking about how American Godzilla is not really that at all, and it's interesting. Like, now we have America making kaiju movies, and we have like King Kong taking over this idea of like the American kaiju. And, you know, King Kong is a kaiju movie. It's a great movie. 1933, incredible film. One of my favorite movies of all time. But it's interesting how, do you think Kong kind of captures the zeitgeist in the same way, or represents things in the same way that Godzilla does?
Fear of foreigner stealing our women.
Could be. I mean, it's what America is known for.
I know Kong, like, overarching themes as well. But yeah, Godzilla has always had this trend of, like, whatever's the big concern at the time. That's what kind of shows up.
I feel like Kong doesn't have that as much.
I feel like Kong really leads into the, like, hey, stop disturbing nature. It's the nature fighting back against sort of, like, civilization, air quotes. I think that's what Kong is. I mean, the Western stuff, it's just like, these are just all excuses to have big monster battles. Let's be quite honest. Like, Kong Skull Island is very much Jurassic Park Lost World. We know we shouldn't be going there, but we're going because we want to get all of this information.
I mean, I do think the original King Kong, if you look at when it was made, the 30s, and the fact that it's a movie about people trying to make a movie about like this mysterious island full of monsters, and they come and bring back Kong, and then they exploit him in New York. There are some themes there if you really want to dig deep.
I mean, they did that in Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, like American colonialism, exploitation of natural resources and stuff like that, which might be giving the movie, the original film, a bit too much credit. But I think it works as sort of delving into some of those themes, but it's not as hard-hitting as emblematic of the nation it's associated with as Godzilla is with Japan, for sure.
Yeah, I would say that, just speaking of like these monster stories being reflective of the times, Monarch is certainly reflective of like the, you know, our penchant for conspiracy theories and government cover-ups. That's all Monarch is about. But I really I really like how you basically said Godzilla has range. You're like, Godzilla could do anything. Godzilla could be kooky. Godzilla could be horrific.
He has a lot of range. Godzilla and Godzuki, the 1970s Hanna-Barbera cartoon, which I grew up with, is hilarious because it's Godzilla with his little Scooby-Doo, Scrappy-Doo son, Godzuki, running around fighting kooky-looking monsters all across the world.
And I love how you then compared Godzilla to Batman, who is true, has rage. Have you read City of Madness?
I have not read City of Madness yet, but it's Batman Cthulhu, isn't it?
It's Batman Cthulhu. It is very good.
And he has both characters that have range. And it's interesting to identify which fictional characters have the most range, because I think Godzilla and Batman are two of the biggest ones. And I'm trying to think of others.
Spider-Man has range.
Spider-Man has range, but I would argue he has, I don't know.
What about Spider-Man Darkhold? That's really fucked up story.
Yeah, it is a fucked up. I think Spider-Man has range, but not as much.
It's true. He was never like Batman Ninja.
Yeah, but he did have Leopardon, so I think.
Yeah, but Batman also had his own mech.
He does have a couple of mechs, yeah. But I think it's more like range in terms of being a cultural icon and melding in a very transformative way. Because I think Spider-Man, probably thanks to really strong characterization starting from the era he was born in, the 60s, has always had a very strong core and very clearly defined things by like Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Whereas Batman, not so much. And Godzilla has also been kind of nebulous, probably because Godzilla is often a background figure in a lot of these films that are about local people reacting to the threat that he brings to the forefront.
Yeah. It helps that he doesn't talk. Yeah. Like, he's not a character. He's more of a natural force.
Yeah, I think that's helped a lot.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to talk about, and very briefly, because I know it's funny, we started posting like YouTube shorts on our channel, and the YouTube short that has performed the best has been one about kaiju.
Oh, really?
The YouTube short that we posted that's done the best is actually one about kaiju number 8, and it has 67,000 views.
I did not like kaiju number 8 as much as I thought I would.
I'm not hate reading it, but I'm reading it just out of habit at this point. It's originally, I really liked the concept of Kaiju number 8 because I was like, oh, cool, we're going to get big monster fights, and then like an interesting protagonist. It's a shonen, it's a really rare modern shonen series that has an adult protagonist.
I like that.
And the art is great. It's what attracted me there. The action is really well done. But it's gotten to the point where every chapter is just a continuation of one fight. We're in our like Bleach era right now for Kaiju number 8. And it is less about the human stories now that are interesting and more about these just like fights with flashbacks. But I know people are going to ask, hey, have you, read or are excited to watch Kaiju number 8? And I think the answer is we've certainly read it. Excitement about the anime? Maybe. We'll see. I think it'll be fun to watch. But
I started reading it because everyone in the Asians Represent Discord server was recommending it when it first came out. And I was like, oh my God, finally a kaiju manga.
People recommending it.
This is what, yes, Daniel Kwan never led me wrong before. But then I realized that it wasn't actually a kaiju manga. It was basically a shonen manga where the main character just happens to transform into a big guy with a cool design. And that's what kind of took me out of it for a while. When I realized that Attack on Titan was more of a kaiju manga than Kaiju number 8, that was when I checked out.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, Attack on Titan also has all of those like darker human themes as well.
Yeah.
Like Kaiju number 8 is very pro-military. If anything, is like the exact opposite of Godzilla. Mm-hmm. But yeah. God. Yeah, I don't think we need to dwell more on Kaiju number 8, but I figured it was something that we should bring up.
I would also like to give a shout out to Gamera because we spent a lot of this this episode talking about Godzilla. But if you're the sort of person who likes Pepsi more than Coke or like Pathfinder more than D&D or something like that, then we must acknowledge the competition to Godzilla Gamera, who I really like Gamera because Gamera is Gamera also has a lot of range in that he's a friend to the children.
Do you like turtles over dinosaurs?
Yeah,
yeah.
Gamera is for the children and can easily be an even more cuddly kaiju who basically stars in musical films from the 60s where he's just befriending kids and helping them from space aliens, or he can star in the trilogy that came out during the what's called the Heisei era of Japan, the like 1995 to 2000s. Those are really good films. Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, Gamera 2 and Gamera 3, they're all really good. And then Gamera the Brave, which came out in 2006, where it's a heartwarming story about a little boy that finds baby Gamera and raises him. Oh. Like it's really good. It's really
I haven't seen any of the Gamera films. So watch
the Gamera Guardian of the Universe from 95 and the ones that follow.
I've only seen one from the 60s, and I don't remember it very well.
Poster for Gamera 2, Attack of Legion, is dope.
Yeah, the 60s ones I love. They're hilarious, but they all kind of blend together in my mind because it's all kids singing the Gamera song where it's like, Gamera, da 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 da, Gamera, yeah, da 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 da, da da da, Gamera. That's the song they sing.
Amazing. Well, I'm definitely going to have to watch all of these.
There's also the new anime on Netflix, Gamera Rebirth. I don't know if it's good or not, but it's got a cool Gamera design. So I want to give a nod to the competition because Gojira tends to dominate. But some days I wake up liking Gamera more.
Did you folks watch the Godzilla anime movies, the Singular Point?
Not yet.
I did not watch Singular Point. I watched those anime movies that came out before Singular Point that were pretty turdy.
Oh no, I haven't seen any anime Godzilla. I just know of the Netflix trilogy. I know they're okay.
Singular Point might be okay. The Netflix trilogy is rough to get through.
I see
what it's trying to do. It's trying to tell a very sci-fi futuristic story about like space colonization and the effects of, I don't know, space militarization using Godzilla as an extreme force of nature. But it's about as successful as like, I don't know, just a not very coherent anime series that happens to use dated CGI, which it just doesn't work out very well.
Okay.
I guess I'm not going to watch it then.
I'm probably still gonna watch it.
What I do want to rewatch is Pacific Rim, the first one.
Oh yeah,
I really like the first.
The anime I had in mind when I described that just now was Pilot Candidate. I don't know if anyone's seen that, also known as the Candidate for Goddess, which was a 19 or late 90s, early 2000s anime that was exactly what I described.
Oh yeah,
incoherent with dated CGI, and the Godzilla movies reminded me of that.
Okay.
Oh my god, this art. So, okay.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Yeah, no, so there thanks. You go. Now, that said, if you're going to recommend one Godzilla movie, because we spend a lot of time talking about Godzilla. So if you're going to recommend one, let's say, kaiju movie, monster movie to the audience, what would it be? That was a tough question.
Can't recommend. There's a lot just one.
Out there.
Okay, yeah. How many do you think is a reasonable number? Let's say three, two or three?
I don't know. I would recommend the original Godzilla if you have not seen it.
You gotta watch that one.
Yeah.
It is a classic.
Yeah, if you want to watch the films that are inspiring what's current today in terms of MonsterVerse and Godzilla Minus One, original Godzilla most definitely. Watch the original King Kong too from the 30s. Where do we go from there?
I would like to vote for Godzilla versus Megalon, just so you can understand my origin story.
Your origin story. So we're going to do Godzilla versus Megalon.
Is that the one where Minilla was first introduced, or was that Son of Godzilla? I don't remember.
That's Son of Godzilla.
Minilla is better in Godzilla versus Megalon, so watch that one.
Okay.
Megalon is this like fly-like creature with drills for hands that jumps around all funny. Like, don't worry about the plot. Just.
I mean, I would recommend Mothra if you're interested in Godzilla's cast of buddies. So I'd recommend Mothra as well, and I would probably recommend the various Godzilla versus King Ghidorah films. I think the original from 1964, Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, introduces Ghidorah. And then you might as well skip to 1991, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, which is kind of a remake, kind of a reimagining, but is pretty freaking awesome.
Okay. So we've got, if we're going to recommend monster kaiju movies, we've got Godzilla versus Megalon. We've got Godzilla. We've got any of the King Ghidorah ones. I'm going to add in Minus One because I think it's it's accessible. I'm going to link some of these things that I can legally link. But if you go on the Internet Archive, all of the Godzilla movies are on the Internet Archive. Is that legal? Is the Internet Archive legal?
Are they all on Internet Archive?
Let's see.
There's a lot of them. As far as I know,
the Internet Archive is legal. So
it runs as a lending service for the most part. And so anything, if you don't have to have an account and borrow it from an institution, means that it is public, it is open.
Okay. So then all of the Godzilla movies, except for minus one that we've mentioned, are on the Internet Archive. And so I will link those all in the show notes for folks. So if you are a patron, you'll have all of those. I'm going to recommend one other monster movie, not necessarily a kaiju. I was going to joke and say, oh, you should watch Clifford. Because I really do like that you mentioned that, Jeremy. But one
that... It's a kaiju, right?
It is a kaiju. If we're just going big monsters, I'm going to go with like a medium-sized monster. And I really strongly recommend The Relic. I think The Relic is a very good monster sort of horror movie. That is very much... this is what you get, colonialism and archaeology and museums. But it is about the Field Museum in Chicago, and an anthropologist steals a relic from South America, and out from this relic spawns this demon monster that starts killing everyone at the gala that's being held at the museum. Very good monster movie. So I recommend that one as well. I'll check to see if it's on the Internet Archive and link it in the show notes.
I would also like to recommend, if you really are interested in the intersection between like Western media and media coming out from Japan, I would recommend the 1965 movie Frankenstein versus Baragon, because they turn Frankenstein into a kaiju.
What?
Yes. Nazis sell the heart of the Frankenstein monster to the Imperial Japanese Navy, and they use him as a weapon in World War II. And then I think Frankenstein gets irradiated due to the nuclear bomb and becomes like a giant kaiju, and then fights a monster called Baragon. Frankenstein versus Baragon got a semi sequel called The War of the Gargantuas. That was how it was promoted in English, but it's I think the Japanese title is like Frankenstein's Monsters, because it's basically like two spawn of Frankenstein that emerge. And so there's these two brothers, Sanda and Gaira, and I just love their designs. They look like shaggy Sasquatch creatures, but
yeah, they look like Sasquatches.
They were used in another IDW Godzilla comic series, which is on my shelf. I think it's Godzilla Complete Rulers of Earth, which is another really great series that features all kaiju from all films. And it's got these deep cuts like Sanda and Gaira in it, and it's got Godzilla, and it's got like Mothra, it's got King Ghidorah, it's got all of them. So I really recommend, if you really want to take a deep dive into the weird Frankenstein versus Baragon and then The War of the Gargantuas, because aside from Gojira and like Gamera, this is like the tertiary crazy stuff that you don't really hear about, but is immensely entertaining.
Awesome. And then the last thing, because the tokusatsu genre was mentioned and we're talking about big monsters, I have to rep Tsupaida Man. Now there's also a significance to this. Tsupaida Man was from the 70s, but it was extremely successful. Like, to us in North America, we may not know that there are actually multiple Japanese Spider-Man characters, but Tsupaida Man was so successful that they and Leopardon as like a mech was so popular that it influenced the inclusion of giant robots into the Super Sentai series. Mm-hmm. Tsupaida Man is so good. It's also on the Internet Archive, so you can watch it there. But that said, before we wrap up, we have some folks to thank. We have some amazing patrons that we have to thank. Our most honorable sponsors, Metalweave Games, Valorous Games, Michelle, Stefan, and the most honorable times to Epic Impulse. Thank you, folks, for your support. We really appreciate you. Asians Represent is going in like a very interesting direction for us, and one that I'm very excited about. I love that we're doing more casual content. I love that we're doing things like No Dice, No Problem. I love that, you know, we're getting interesting and kooky questions in the Discord server for us to answer on that show. And I love that, you know, we set aside some time to go watch a really, really cool kaiju movie, Emma. And now we got to talk about it with Jeremy. But that said, we really appreciate you folks. If you folks want to be more involved in the Asians Represent conversation, join our Discord server. It's open now. Anybody can join. Join our Discord server. If you got questions that you want us to answer on No Dice, No Problem, let us know. You could write them in show discussions, or if you're a patron, we have a dedicated patron mailbox channel that you can post questions in. We are going to be doing a special episode of No Dice, No Problem soon with our first formal guest.
Yeah.
Emma was like a voice on one episode that we recorded at Big Bad Con. But Jeremy is going to be our first formal guest of No Dice, No Problem.
Ask me how I try to fit Kaiju into every single campaign I run. Emma and Daniel know. Ask me how I just make Kaiju into everything.
But if you've got questions for us, if you've got questions for Jeremy, No Dice, No Problem is a show where we answer your questions, serious and silly. Let us know on Discord. But that said, I think that's a wrap for this episode of Asians Represent. We'll see you folks next time.
Cue the hot music.
Cue hot music. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
The history of role-playing games is weird and wild, and we here at System Mastery are determined to look through it all.
Every heartbreaker that drove a man to bankruptcy to see his vision of D&D with really specific armor maintenance rules come to fruition.
Every game where you get increasingly certain as you read it that this is all just one person's weird fetish.
Every system that painstakingly recreates how medieval life was really like, and then also you can cast Fireball.
The System Mastery podcast wallows in the filth of RPG history. Come!
Join us in the muck
at System Mastery.